Hi, everybody. I'm Gary Thorne, and we welcome you to These Sports Rivals. It is brought to you by the Believe Podcast Network, number one podcast network for professionals. Do you believe? Well, our purpose here, as always, is to present memories of classic sports rivalries. We do it through the words of those who participated in them. These are the rivalries that are described from the inside out. And today we're going to turn to an area where rivalries just predominate, and that's in college sports, and in college basketball in particular. The rivalry that we're going to talk about today, the University of Arizona and Stanford and the Pac-12. And our guests today are two players who participated in those rivalries, and they're going to talk about what those rivalries were like for each of them. Richard Jefferson played at the University of Arizona under the great Lute Olson, the Hall of Fame basketball coach, 1998 to 2001 for Richard. He was a first-round pick by Houston at the end of his collegiate career, 17-year professional career, and an NBA championship in 2016 with the Cleveland Cavaliers. He moved on to the broadcast booth. He has broadcast for YAS, ESPN, Fox, the Pac-12, and there's on the University of Arizona campus a place called Jefferson Gym, and it was made possible by Richard's donation to the university, and a great donation and a great building that the university named for him. Our other guest is Casey Jacobson. Casey was at Stanford. He was a first-team All-American sophomore, an All-Pac-12 player for the years he played for Stanford from 99 through 2001. A first-round 2002 pick, Phoenix, 5 years in the NBA, and then a very interesting professional career, 9 years playing in Europe. When Casey Jacobson finished his collegiate career, he was in the Stanford record book 39 different places. He, too, Jeez. Went on to the broadcast booth. Don't be scared, Richard. It's all right. Casey went on to work in the broadcast booth with Phoenix, with Fox, with the Pac-12, and the two of them join us here. So Richard Jefferson, University of Arizona, Casey Jacobson out of Stanford. Gentlemen, it is great to have you on board here to talk about this tremendous rivalry between these two schools and the two of you who got to play against one another. If I am right here, and I'll ask Richard, you can go first on this, just to go back to when you first met. Was it at the camp with Michael Jordan in 99? Is that where you two first came across each other?
I feel like that's the case. I'm trying to recall because I'd heard of Casey Jacobson when he was in high school. Obviously, all the records and scoring, went to a fairly well-known high school and was playing well. And I feel like Arizona was recruiting Casey. Am I correct, Casey? Were they recruiting you?
Oh, yeah. They definitely were. Yeah, all the West Coast schools were.
Listen, once you say Arizona's recruiting you, then that means all the West Coast schools are recruiting you. That's all you got to say. You don't have to go, like, once Arizona's recruiting you, that means everyone in the country is recruiting you. But why didn't you go to Arizona? I'm curious as that. Not that Stanford was a bad choice, like, legitimate, but why didn't you go to Arizona?
Because my mom and dad said it was a bad school. And if I was going to get a scholarship, if people were offering me a full scholarship to play ball, my mom was like, you know what? You might as well also get a good education in Arizona. So, like, you should probably go to Stanford. I was like, you're right, Mom. Smart advice.
No, it was actually great advice by your mom. Okay, so let's go back to that. So Arizona wasn't a good enough school. And look, at the end of the day, Stanford was, I won't say like as good as Arizona at basketball, but you were like probably our number one rival. It was like UCLA was starting to kind of wane down and like Stanford was on the rise up, right?
Well, if you remember, Rich, so you're 1 year older than I am. Mm-hmm. So you started your basketball career in 98, 99.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that was the year, if I'm not mistaken, that Stanford was coming off their final four appearance.
Yeah.
when they had Arthur Lee, Chris Weems, Mark Madsen. They beat Rhode Island to advance to the Final Four that year. So I was in high school watching that. And up until, you know, my late high school years, Richard, I never even had Stanford on my radar. They weren't good enough at basketball. I knew how cool they were, but they were never good enough at basketball to really consider going there. I think that Final Four put them on the map nationally, and it certainly opened my eyes to, hey, Stanford actually has some ballers. They're not just a bunch of nerds, right? So,
well, they're still a bunch of nerds, but they're nerds that can ball. Let's call it what it is. But to your point, like Arizona was the exact same thing. So the year before, Arizona went to the national championship, won the national championship in 97. Shout out to Miles Simon, my guy, NBA champion, you know, was on the Lakers as an assistant coach. So I don't fault you. I made the exact same decision. Like Arizona went to the national championship game, won it. And then that following year is the year I was making my decision. And I'm like, dude, like it's 90 minutes away from home and the best team in the best school, best basketball reigning champions want you to come there. It's not much of a choice. Like you have no choice.
But I'm pretty sure the first time we met, Richard, was during that Michael Jordan flight school. And for those who are listening who don't know about it, it's the premier. It's Michael Jordan. It's Michael Jordan's flight school. He puts on, it's a camp for young kids at UC Santa Barbara. And I don't even know if he still does it. I don't believe he does. Yeah. But for 20 years during his playing career, that was like the camp to go to. Right. But more so than the little kids, it was the place to be if you were a college basketball player, because he would invite the best, like, you know, we're talking about the best players from in and around the country to come and be coaches and counselors. None of us were really interested in coaching 8 and 9 year old booger picking kids. What we really went there to do was to play pickup games at night with MJ. That was the treat for all of us.
That was
right?
The treat.
We got a picture.
We got one autograph. Like, and it was like, for us, it was like a dream. But that's where, like, it's so crazy, Case, when we go back to that and I think about the people that were there at that camp. It's like, I remember meeting Amari Stoudemire when he was a sophomore in high school. And he's like, yeah, I think I'm going to the pros. And we're like, wait, what? And then it was like, I think it was like Jared Jack was there. And
do you remember Diana Taurasi was the only female there and she played with the other guys her age and was dominating?
I don't remember.
You don't?
Well, no, but because this is the thing. I think you went, what year did you go? Because I went
2 years.
2 years in a row. I only went 1 year. So I think she might have been there your second year. But yeah, that camp was, for us, that was a dream. Like we got to play pickup against, you know, our idol. And also it was cool because we knew that it was nothing but high school, our college All-Americans there. So it was like you or like Dunleavy or, you know, all of these guys. Jay Williams and Gilbert was there. I feel like Luke was there.
Hey, speaking of Gilbert, hey, the funniest story from that entire camp, Richard, was remember when the camp is over, everybody gets a photograph and an autograph from Michael Jordan, the campers and the counselors. You can bring anything you want. It could be a jersey, people bringing in pictures, whatever had. At the end, we were just kind of messing around back at the dorms where we were staying. We were playing ping pong, and Gilbert was hanging out, and Gilbert was selling. He had a duffel bag, and he was selling gear that was signed by Michael. And I was like, Gil, how do you, we only got one signature. How are you selling this stuff? He's like, hey, these kids don't know. I just started writing Michael's
signature. The funny thing is like when people ask me about Gilbert and you see him now, and like, obviously if you follow his career and some of the shenanigans, people don't understand. Gilbert has been that person his entire life. Since he picked up a basketball, since he was probably 14 or 15 years old, he was absurdly talented. The game came so easy for him, and he was a crazy person, a legit crazy person. But no, you know what's so funny about, you know, to getting back to like the Stanford Arizona thing. So like I didn't know that much about Stanford. You know, Arizona was Arizona, UCLA was here, but I knew Stanford was really, really good, but they hadn't kind of crossed over into that like high level national attention. They were just one of the best schools on the West Coast. And best teams, but then they got the Collins twins the year before I got there. And then I don't think they had much of a recruiting class. My freshman year, it was like us and UCLA. And then you were the big recruit the following year. And the funny thing is this, is that when we talk about rivalries, a lot of people times people don't understand that rivalries start before you get to college. And let me explain. So Luke Walton went to Uni High School in San Diego, and it was like him and his brothers. One brother played at San Diego State. His other brother played at Princeton. So these guys were like, you got three Division I, 6 foot eight guys on one team in varying ages. They played the Collins Twins twice in the state championship in LA. Mm-hmm. One game they lose, like it was like a really, really close game to Jason and Jaron Collins. And I feel like they had somebody else at Harbor Westlake. Then the next year, Luke's brother's senior year, they lose to the Collins Twins again in like overtime. Now the Collins Twins go on to win the state championship, Harvard Westlake, good for them. Fast forward, they're both at Stanford. And Luke is my roommate in college. And all he kept talking about is how much he hated the Collins Twins, like hated them. And Luke ended up winning a state championship his senior year. And just for all the people, for you to understand how hard it is to win a state championship in the state of California, he went against the Collins Twins. Obviously, he went to the NBA and his brothers. But the team that they faced in the finals was Deshaun Stevenson and Jared Jeffries. That both went on to play in the NBA from Fresno. So that's who they played. So it's like you're just talking about NBA future NBA players just to get out of get to win a state championship. And so I started hating the Collins Twins just because he hated them, and I was like, well, screw Stanford. And so it was just funny that like the rivalry started before I ever played a game my freshman year because Luke hated the Collins Twins. And I'm like, dude, you're my boy. If you hate them, I hate them. Screw them. And so that's for me what kind of peaked up the rivalry very, very quickly, even though I wasn't even a part of it.
Yeah, the basketball world is small, Rich. I mean, I played with Luke Walton on a couple of AAU tournaments, you know, for ARC basketball. So I knew Luke. Ricky Anderson, who played at Arizona, and he's from Long Beach. I was rivals with Jason Capono in high school. Mm-hmm. And so we all go to the Pac-12. It was the Pac-10, of course, back then. So, yeah. By the way, dude, it's 20 years ago since we played college basketball.
That makes no sense, dude. It's tripping me out, dude. I'm glad we both still look young. Like if you were bald now, it would make me feel a lot older. Like I was always bald then and you always had the same haircut. So this makes me feel like it was like only like 10 years ago. So that definitely helps. But you're right. It is small, man. It is a very, and this was pre, I know it's going to sound crazy, but this is pre-internet. This is pre-social media. So like everything that you heard was like word of mouth. It's like, yo, there's this kid, man. There's this kid named Casey Jacobson, man. He can shoot from anywhere. He runs around. He's really good. Or, oh, yo, man, there's this kid, Jefferson, man. That like, man, he's from Arizona. I don't know where he's from, but man, he's pretty athletic. Like everything was like, we would sit on the bleachers and we would watch the legend of everybody was kind of just word of mouth. Like, yo, who do we got, man? We got, you know, the ARC team. They got a bunch of dudes that are going here, going there. And it was fun, man. That was the cool thing is that we all, like, especially the California kids, like you guys kind of played against each other, like or played with each other during the summers. And then you were rivals during your high school team. I was from Arizona where we didn't have that same type of level of competition. So it was like all of the Arizona kids would have to get together to then go try and compete against the, you know, six or seven best teams from California or the best teams in the country. We couldn't have multiple AAU teams. So we started developing a rivalry with kind of like the California kids. It wasn't much of a rivalry, but we started developing that. And so, you know, like knowing Mike McDonald,
yeah,
he was working at the pump camps when I was like 16, 17 years old. He was working at the pump camps, me and Gilbert. I didn't even know he played basketball. I kid you not. Because he would just sit there and then like he would like work the score clock. He would just do all this stuff. And the next thing I know, like this dude is like starting for Stanford. And I was like, wait, that's the dude that just used to work the clock because he just never played. He was like already committed and all of their stuff. So it was fun to see how small of a world it was. And we haven't even gotten into these shitty games that we used to play, dude, against each other.
Oh. All right. So do you remember all the games Stanford versus
every
their-
single one.
All right.
Let's rewind really quickly before we get into our generation. Arizona and Stanford had a really big basketball history, like the couple years prior. Freshman year, the very first game, we lost to Cal, so we were pissed off. We go to Stanford. It is rocking. Like, we are like probably like seventh or eighth in the country. I break my foot in that game. I break my foot like 5 minutes into that game, my sophomore year. And then all of a sudden, like, Luke ended up having to play like 38 minutes that night and almost died. But, oh, I remember every single one of those games.
So you are a year older than I am. So your freshman year, I wasn't playing at Stanford. That was, Mark Madsen, the late Pete Sauer passed away a few years ago. He was on that team.
Yeah.
Anyways, our first matchup was in 2000. So January of 2000, my freshman year, we were, if you remember, Rich, we were undefeated.
Undefeated.
We were number one team in the nation. We had just got the number one ranking maybe like 2 weeks before. We were 12-0. And I think it was the very first weekend or maybe the second weekend of Pac-12 play. And it was a really good game. And you guys beat us by three. But that was the game you were referring to. You broke your foot in that game.
Yeah. Okay, so that was the game I broke my foot.
And the only thing I'll mention about that, so it happened really early. And for people who never followed basketball at this time or followed Stanford at all, we used to have a really bouncy floor at Maples Pavilion. It was a floor that would go up and down. Like, if you stepped on it, it would go down and it would come up. It was really strange. It was one of the most unique floors, almost like a WWF.
Yeah, there's only like three floors like that in the country.
Yeah. I've never asked you this, but do you blame the floor at all for breaking your foot?
No, because I had a stress reaction. I did have a stress reaction. The first time it happened was, I want to say, I was like 12 years old. And I felt a pop in my foot, went to the doctor, and the doctor was like, oh, just stay off of it, blah, blah, blah. And so, like, fast forward, I never have any issues. Like, did that probably have an effect? Yes, but I had already, like, there was something that it was like, I felt the exact same pop. Right. That I felt. And I remember because I was like going to like save a ball out of bounds when I was like 12 years old. So like I remember all my weight being on there where I felt the pop. Fast forward to this game. It's like, was there always probably a little stress reaction there or something there and that triggered it? I didn't give that much thought. You know what it was? I just wanted to beat Stanford so bad. And I was so mad because I'd had a terrible game against Cal the night before. And we were in Pac-12 play, so I was super locked in. I was super focused. We knew you guys were the number one team in the country, and we didn't like that. We didn't like that you guys were undefeated. We didn't like that you guys were number one in the country. We were like, these guys, these basketball nerds, these guys.
You guys were number five in the country. It's not
this was the crazy thing. It's like, we were number five, but I feel like we had lost to Cal.
So you
we
did, knew yeah. That you had we, two losses coming in. Yeah.
So we had lost to Cal. So I knew that next game was like, dude, if we go 0-for up here, and maybe we overlooked Cal, maybe we didn't, but Cal was still a good team, very, very good team at the time. And so I just remember Gilbert. Well, they were, when I say good, I mean that like they could
for
beat
Cal
anybody.
Standards, they were good.
For Cal standard, yeah, this is when like, you remember like Lampley won like the Pac-12 player of the year. Like they had talent on that team.
He was the leading scorer, but he didn't have a lot around him.
Yeah. So I remember this. I know Casey's upset about that one, that Pac-12 player. I can feel it, Case. No, I remember is that our coach used to tell us, he used to go, hey, if the crowd gets too crazy and the floor starts bouncing, tell them that it's affecting the rim, right? Tell them that it's affecting the rim. And so that's what Jason Gardner did it when like it was like late in the game and the crowd was going crazy and all of a sudden the rim would shake. And the rim would shake. And so we would stop, like Jay Gardner would go and tell the official, like, hey, the rim's shaking. So they would get on the mic and tell the student section that they had to not jump around. And that just infuriated them. It was one of the best feelings ever. But we snuck out with the win. I'm on crutches before, because it happened 2 minutes. I went and saw the doctor, came back, and then ultimately I got to watch my team win that very, very first game against you guys.
So we ended up bouncing back. We played you guys two months later and got a win at McHale.
Oh, it's disgusting.
This is a great time for me to bring up the fact that I had a winning record at McHale. I'm probably one of the only
few
basketball Pac-12 people that could possibly say that in their career. I was 2-1 at McHale. But in full transparency, Richard, I will admit that I was 0-3 against Arizona at Maples Pavilion. How about that? I never beat Arizona in my home gym, but I got two wins at McHale. It's just really bizarre.
It was so funny though, because like, okay, so the next year, which was, and this is one thing that when people talk about rivalries, like, yeah, we're talking about rivalries. I try and tell people, Arizona and Stanford were both number one seeds in the tournament.
Yeah, like, we just were to give that perspective, teams in the country the whole
year for 2 years in a row. So, and then my junior year, your sophomore year, we were started off number one in the country. Lute Olson's wife had passed away. So just, we were going through some stuff. So that year we were a two seed and you guys were a one seed. So it was like the whole time, like the West Coast basketball, which I know for you and I, because we've done the Pac-12, it's been hard to watch, right? It's been hard to watch, like, just not even a lack of dominance, but just a lack of national
relevancy. Prominence.
Yeah.
I remember that the year you're talking about, my sophomore year, your junior year, that was the 2001 NCAA tournament. And I remember, and I'm sure you do as well, three Pac-10 teams made the Elite Eight that year. Mm-hmm. Eight. I mean, we proved to be the best conference in America. It wasn't close either.
Nope.
And in fact, even though UCLA did not make the Elite Eight, they did make the Sweet 16.
It was USC.
USC, us, and you were the three teams that made the Elite Eight. You were the only team that advanced to the Final Four. Of course, you guys ended up playing Duke in the national championship that year and lost. But, I mean, talk about the golden years of the Pac-10, now the Pac-12. I feel like, there hasn't been a year quite like that one.
No, and it's been tough, man, because there was a change. Like, obviously, the stars, like your coach decided to take on and try and go to the pros. Lute Olson dealt with, some illness and just a lot of stuff personally. So it was like the two guys that had really built the Pac-12 up, right? That was the part that was hard because it felt like it all happened at once, right? And even UCLA was going through like transitional phases. But I'll say this. So my junior year,
we beat basically the same thing as the year before, which is we played you guys in January at McHale and won. Yes. And then 2 months later, you guys played in March, right before the tournament started, you guys came to Maples. And you beat us by one. If you remember, it was the game that Mike Wright made a layup with 3 seconds to go.
So when we lost to you guys at home, like, we were still going through some stuff. That's when Lute Olson's wife had passed and he wasn't there. And we started off number one in the country and we fell as far as like 22 because we lost a bunch of games. We won the Maui Classic and then ended up losing like 3 out of our next 5 because our coach wasn't there. Like, we were just, so we lose to you guys. And I remember our assistant coach, Jim Rosborough, comes in. He's like, "Hey guys, we're going to figure this out. You guys stay together and we're going to go up there at the end of the season and we're going to whoop Stanford's ass." Right. So fast forward, like,
someone's ass by 1 point, but carry
agreed.
On.
Agreed. I'm telling you the story that he tells us, but this is the story comes full circle. So we go up to Stanford and we know how big of a game it is. Like, we used to get up for Stanford so much, and after the game, we win. We're excited. Mike Wright hit that huge shot. And Lute Olson comes in and he was like, "Guys," he was always so stoic. He never got excited, never got emotional. He was just like, "Guys, that was a very good win. I'm proud of the way you played." And he was like, "And I did not know that Coach Roz had told you guys that you guys were going to win this game 5 months ago." So, like, Roz had told him in the meeting, he's like, "I'm so glad we won because I told these guys that we were going to win this game like 5 months ago. So I'm glad." So that was like the funnest part. But just to give people an understanding of how different Arizona and Stanford was, we both, I think it was my sophomore year, where we tied for the Pac-12, where we tied. Was that?
That was the sophomore year because we won it outright my sophomore year.
Yeah. Yeah. So junior, we both had three losses. Everybody. But the difference was we beat Stanford twice. We would just lose to like shitty teams, and then Stanford would show up, and then we would win these games. So it was like you look at our record, and it was like, oh, they had the exact. They're both 15-13, but it was like they had two losses to us. So I always said that, like, even though we tied, like we won the tiebreaker because we beat them twice. But it didn't work that way. But it was funny because. And Casey, there is always this image that will be imprinted in my brain for as long as we live. So both of us were very nationally prominent, like playing on national TV a ton. And so there would always be that normal ESPN or Fox Sports shot where they would have the camera below the guy and he would be like shooting a basket. Yeah. And he'd be like, oh, this person's averaging, 15 over their last five. And so what we were doing, because we had a bunch of idiots on our team, like full-blown idiots, whenever the camera, you normally should just feed the guy and let him get a couple of shots.
Feed the guy just a couple of shots,
because the camera's going to be on him for like 10 seconds of every shot. So what we would do is whenever the camera was on Gilbert or Jason Garden or Luke Walton, he would shoot a shot, and then we would fire a ball at his chest, like as the ball was being released. And all of a sudden the guy would be like ducking and dodging. Like, and it was like the cameraman would get so mad because he's like, dude, I just need a 10-second shot. And we were doing this the entire time. And I remember looking over at your face, Casey, and you were sitting on the bench kind of watching us do this little pre-warm-up. And you were just in awe. Like, do these guys take anything seriously at all? Yeah. And it was like, no, we didn't. But that's what made our school so like fun and different, is because it was a contrast in style and personality, but there was such a mutual respect and hatred for the other ones. Like, these guys don't party. These guys don't have fun. They're here for this. You look at us, like, these guys don't take anything seriously. Like, what are these guys even about? But it was awesome because we both respected each other so, so much, and the games were just all time.
The games were all time, man. I of all the teams, when I think back to my 3 years at Stanford, by the way, we both had a 3-year college career and left for the NBA, which I always want to ask you, Rich, we now live in a one and done college era. How long would you have stayed if you were a college basketball player in 2020 at Arizona? How long would you stay? And I want you to answer it honestly. Maybe you weren't ready after your freshman year and you would have stayed for your sophomore year, but would you have stayed 3 years if you played now?
Look, I say this. I think it's a cultural thing. And I mean like the basketball culture, right? If you were a McDonald's All-American and you were one of the top players in the country, it doesn't matter. Like, no one stayed for their junior year like then. So I wouldn't sit here and be like, well, I stayed 3 years. It's like, dude, if I was a McDonald's All-American and I was all Pac-12 and went to the second round of the tournament. But the crazy thing is that would Jason Terry had been there for his senior year? Would the Collin twins had been there, right? For as long as they did. So it's like, now kids are showing up as freshmen and they're the best player on the team. So this, even if the team's not that good. So, for me, like, I probably would have done what the culture stated. Like, back then, we would play our freshman year and get experience. Second year, we would come out and try and dominate. And then our third year, we were trying to either win a national championship or be player of the year. That's kind of like the transition, because you were getting physically ready to go and take that next step. Where now, even the NBA is so much younger. There's not as many veterans. There's not as many this. So I'm not going to sit up here on a pedestal and say, like, I thought about leaving my sophomore year because I, like, broke my foot.
So did I.
Yeah, so I broke my foot and came back, and our entire team was coming back. And I was like, dude, if I come back, like, we got a chance at a national championship. Mm-hmm. I'm like, why would I try and go and be in late first round where I wasn't really probably physically or mentally ready, maybe physically or athletically ready, but not like mentally and understood the game the right way. And you're not going to lose anything, but by being under your coach or being under my coach, you're not going to lose anything in that year. So I don't know. I think it's culture. I would prefer it if they changed the culture, because I think these kids just, they don't understand the benefit of these 2-3 years that you get.
Yeah, I'm of the opinion that nobody outside of maybe a LeBron James, a Zion Williamson is really ready after high school. I would argue that 99% of kids aren't ready after their freshman year in college. Mm-hmm. But I do understand why kids want to go. I don't judge them. I mean, look, you and I both left early. If I were honest, I would probably say that I would have maybe left after my sophomore year. Mm-hmm. If I were playing today, it was definitely not something that a lot of kids were doing, in the early 2000s. There were some, but I almost feel like kids who left after their sophomore year were elite. And I knew that although I was a really good player, I knew I wasn't elite, and I wasn't going to go into the NBA and just start crushing it. I knew that about myself, and I knew that Stanford gave me a great platform. We played in a really good system. Mike Montgomery was a great coach. So to me, it was kind of a no-brainer to come back after 2 years. But you're right about that culture thing. I'm not blaming these kids. It's just a part of
The way the game yeah. has evolved. Well, I think they messed it up. They messed it up once they made kids go to college. Because once they made kids go to college and they eliminated the high school kids, because basically the high school kids would go, right, if you wanted to go. And that would kind of weed out a lot of the kids. And then the guys that went to college were like, I'm going to college because I want to go to college, right? It's not because like, oh, well, I got to come here and I'm being one and done. But now if you go to school 1 year and they're like, oh, we have you at the bottom of the first round, you're like, I'm out. There is I want to go to school. And also it's the people that are putting these kids in their heads. They're like, well, if you don't leave now, the next crop of kids are going to be coming in. Yeah. And then they're going to be doing it. It's like, dude, there's no difference between a 19-year-old kid and an 18-year-old kid and a 20-year-old kid. And, so it's like if you stay another year and you go from averaging 12 to 17 and your team goes further, like, yeah, your stock can improve. But people would rather improve in the NBA than improve in college.
Lou Dort is a great example of that. Mm-hmm. And he actually had a really good playoff. Like he had a great game 7 and it's probably going to work out for him, but he went undrafted. He was the perfect example of a guy that had a good freshman year, had a ton of potential, but man, he needed some polish. He needed to stay another year in college and learn and grow. And instead he's like, I don't care if I go undrafted at all. I'm going to go the G League route. And I just like, man, that's risky. Now, again, it might work out for him, Rich, but there's, 10 other Lou Dorts out there that are thinking that same thing and are never going to sniff an NBA floor.
Guys, I hate to interrupt you, but I want to make sure that we have an opportunity for each of you to talk about the Hall of Fame coaches that both of you had while playing college basketball. Casey, let me start with you at Stanford and Mike Montgomery.
Yeah, I'll try to be brief and honest. Mike Montgomery was one of the reasons that I went to Stanford, but I'd be lying to say that he was the reason. Stanford was just such an amazing school. And then when I went my freshman year, I actually didn't like Coach Montgomery as much as I thought I would. We butted heads a little bit, and here's why. I was a confident young man. I wanted to, I was a McDonald's All-American, and I walked into my freshman year thinking that I was one of the best. We had Mark Madsen, who was an All-American. He was the leader of our team. But besides Mark, I thought I was our second best guy. And I wanted to start. I wanted to play all 40 minutes. And Coach Montgomery refused to start me in the starting five. And we went, I don't even know if Richard even remembers this, but I came off the bench the first half of that year. And so when we were undefeated, we were the number one team in the country. I was our sixth man as a freshman and our leading scorer. I was averaging 14 points off the bench. And Rich, you know me, that burned me. I was like, Coach, I should be on the floor for every minute. Like, I should be a starter. You should never take me out. And he was so old school. And he was like, no, David Mosley was our starter. He was a senior. He was one of the captains. And he's like, David has earned his stripes. And I'm like, that's not flying with me. I'm better than Mose. All respect to Mose, but I was a better player than he was, and I wanted to start. So that was difficult for me. But once I matured, Rich, I mean, we're all young and dumb. We all think we have the world by the horns. Once I kind of got past that and really started to understand how amazing a coach Mike Montgomery was, he was the best, and this includes all the coaches I played for in the pros and in Europe. He was the best coach at X's and O's that I've ever played for. He was also the best coach that got us prepared. We were never out prepared. We walked through every scenario that a team would throw at us. Mm-hmm. And so it was just a matter of execution. I never felt like man, our coach doesn't know what he's doing, or our rotations are stupid, or we have the wrong scheme defensively. I never felt that way. So grateful for him. And then as I grew up, Richard, like my sophomore year, my junior year, I stopped like holding any resentment toward Coach Montgomery and started to appreciate just the genius that he was and the amazing opportunity that he gave me. But but honestly, it took me at least a year to start to like to play for Coach Montgomery.
Yeah, dude, you didn't even have to be briefed. And I think that is I think it's such a beautiful thing. And I would do the exact same thing to my kids, because you understand the value, right? You understand the value of it. And, you know, Lute Olson was the same way. I remember like Jason Terry, and this is one thing where I will compliment, you know, Coach Montgomery, is that you wanted guys, like you have a senior that's about to be a senior and he's put in all of his time and he's going to be on one of the top teams in the country. And you have a young All-American coming in. And it's like for that coach to be like, hey, look, man, like, I'm sorry. Like, I would not do that to you. If you hurt yourself and you were a senior and we had a young All-American kid coming in, but you had put in your four years, I'm going to give this senior the opportunity. I don't give a damn how good you are. But think about what message that sent to Mosley. Think about what message that sent to you. Think about what message that sent to all of the future recruits that were coming in. And like, you know, that right there, as difficult as it is, and it's not something that you ever want to experience, you understand the value of it. And you were intelligent, so you understood the value shortly thereafter. Like, you understood, it's like, okay, I get what he's doing. I understand. I don't like it, but sports is about doing shit that you don't like very, very often because it has a benefit. And I always point to Lute Olson. It's like Jason Terry was a great player, playing the league for 19 years. He's a freshman. He's a freshman, plays great. Sophomore year, Mike Bibby comes in. Mike Bibby's a local kid. Now think about it. You got Mike Bibby and Jason Terry. These guys combined play 32 years in the NBA, right? And Jason Terry had to come off the bench. He was like, Jason, I think you're going to be a great bench player for us. I think you're going to come off. You're going to be our defensive guy. And he was like, dude, I'm an NBA player. He was the 10th pick in the draft. And Mike Bibby was the second pick in the draft. But for a coach, and it's kind of like the same story for you, it's like for a coach to come in and be able to like harness and control young players and young egos and say, look, if you come off the bench, like we have a chance to be national champions. You know, like you coming off the bench gave your team everything that they needed to like be one of the top teams in the country. But you start to learn about sacrificing. And then Jason Terry got his opportunity his senior year. Mike Bibby's gone. Jason Terry was national player of the year, was all of that stuff. Had he not put in the time, had he decided to transfer, had he decided to have an attitude, he wouldn't have had all of the accomplishments and been the 10th pick of the draft. You know, for me, you know, playing with Lute Olson, and I never understood why all of the older players would come back, because Lute Olson was like your grandfather. He was. There's no other way to describe him. He was like your grandfather that like he would never, you'd never see him cry or emotional. You just saw him very stoic all the time. And he obviously had a reputation as like a very good coach and all this other stuff, and he's done it forever. But I would see like Sean Elliott and Steve Kerr and all of these guys come back, and they'd be in the corner drinking wine, hanging out with him. And we would be in awe. We were like, how do these guys even want to talk to him? This man is mean. You had to set an appointment to talk to him. You had to set, like, if you want to talk to Coach Olson, there wasn't just go sit in his office and like crack jokes with him. It was like, hey, this is Coach Olson's secretary. He'd like to talk to you. How does 2 to 2:30 sound? Right. And it was like, I know you have class and wait. So like you had to set an appointment to go talk with your coach. Like, and that rubbed some people the wrong way. Like guys that were like, they would hear these stories and they're like, oh, I don't want to meet. But, you know, cause everybody needs something different. But what I learned from Coach Olson was that all of these guys came back because when they got to that next level, they understood him so much more. You knew that he prepared you not only just to be a good basketball player, but to be a good person. And I always say this, Lute Olson's achievements as a coach are not the Sean Elliott's. They're not the Damon Stoudemire's or the Mike Bibby's. It's the guys like Sean Rooks that played in the league 10 years. Guys like Steve Kerr that played in the league 10 years and are now coaching. Guys like Tom Tolbert, Judd Bushler, Luke Walton. Guys that weren't like highly recruited. They weren't these overly studs, but he spent 3 to 4 years working on these guys, honing their ability, teaching them the game of basketball. And like, he would do that at such a high level that when these guys got to the NBA, you would be like, I need that guy on my roster. He knows how to play. He's selfless. Like, he does all the right things. And I always say that that's the biggest compliment. Now, for guys like myself and Andre Iguodala and like these athletes, where he was great was he would teach, like, you know how we used to play. We were like this up and down, Casey. And the thing that he was really good at is he would teach athletes how to play and then let them go play. And if we ever got a little crazy, he would reel us back in or talk to us or give us a little bit of direction and then let us go play. Like, we had 5 plays at Arizona. 5. 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5. That was it. Those were the 5 plays. And all of the guys used to come back as like, do you guys still only have 5 plays? And it was like, yo, he's been doing this for 20 years and we still only have 5 plays. He just
we
kept
had 50.
It.
We had 50.
See, he kept it simple.
But maybe it was because you guys weren't smart enough to remember more than 5 plays, Rich. I'm saying.
Casey, but think about the intelligence of a coach to know that his players can't remember 5 plays. Don't get frustrated at it. But the funny thing is that he recruited, like, Sean Elliott would come back who hadn't been there in 15 years and be like, is he still running 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5? We're like, yep, that's what we're running. So it's like, think about that, to be able to be as consistently dominant as Lute Olson and, you know, even whether it's Iowa days or like Long Beach State, he only had 5 plays. That means you're teaching people how to play basketball at a very, very high level and you're using their best skills in their favor, because it's not like you have a bunch of trickery. You don't have a bunch of trickery. It's just like, you know, you throw it to Richard, you throw it to the wing, you throw it to the other thing. And it was like, we used to joke that, like, I never saw the ball twice in the possession. If that ball started off with Gilbert, it was probably going to go maybe one more pass and that was it. If it started off to me, it was never getting to Mike Wright or Lauren Woods or Luke Walton. It was never. So it was like, wherever that ball started, it would typically go there. But Lute Olson, and God rest his soul, you know, and Coach Montgomery, I know he had such respect for Coach Montgomery and these guys, and you would see them kind of laugh and joke, but it was awesome to watch Lute Olson prepare against Stanford, watch him prepare against UCLA, because he knew how much those games meant to him. And our last thing I'll say about him is, and why I still to this day, I love him. And I remember, you know, freshman year and I did something stupid and I did something. He's like, Richard, what are you doing? Like, that play right there, yeah, it was great, but you know, you're not like, you're bad teams, you're gonna get that, you won't be able to get that against good teams. And you want to know something, Richard? And I was like, what, coach? He was like, we don't prepare to beat bad teams here. And I was like, there's nothing you can say to argue with that. Like, if he's telling you, like, we don't prepare to beat bad teams, like, he telling you that he's preparing you to play against Stanford, who's number one in the country, who's preparing you to play against UCLA that has Baron Davis and Matt Barnes and all of these guys. So that's always will be something that'll resonate with me. Like, don't prepare to beat bad teams. Just because you can get away with it doesn't mean that that's how you should prepare. And, you know, those are things that have just kind of stuck with me, you know, watching him prepare to play against Coach Montgomery and you know, players like yourself.
Yeah. Guys, you have I hate to have to cut this off, but you have you've extended the time frame on here. And it's just, I mean, just unbelievable.
Me and Casey could do this for days, man. Me and Casey, like, an hour later, we're going to be like, oh, I should have told that story.
Well, I was going to get into trash talking. I'd asked Casey about this earlier in the day. But you've covered that pretty well.
No. So I'm going to say one more thing. About Case and about, like, kind of our rivalry. So we knew that – at Arizona, we had 5 guys, maybe 6 guys averaging double figures. There wasn't like, we didn't have like we had scores, but we didn't have a guy like Casey who was like the focal point. It was always spread around. It was always well-balanced. So the one thing that we kind of had an understanding of is whenever we played against a top player for the other team, so like Gilbert and Casey, that was a high-level matchup. Or I remember we played against Texas that had Chris Mem versus Michael Wright and Lauren Woods. we would always, I'd be like, Gilbert, this is your game. Knock yourself out. Shoot the ball as much as you want. You do whatever you want against Casey. If you shoot the ball 100 times, I don't care, because this is the matchup that you knew. There was tons of NBA scouts. They were watching Gilbert. They were watching Casey. And so it was like, yo, we would do that. And it was so much fun to know that if I was playing against, you know, another high level wing, that my teammates were going to let me shoot the ball 20 times that night. But if we were playing against Casey Jacobson, Gilbert would just look at me. He's like, you know, you're not shooting the ball tonight. I'm like, yeah, go ahead, knock yourself out. So like, that was fun. That was one of the things that, like, for, unfortunately for Casey and a lot of other players, like, not that Casey was ever worried, but Casey's night became harder because we always tried to feature the guy that was going against another featured guy.
I remember. These are good memories. These are good memories. Thanks for strolling down memory lane with me, Richard. It's fun. Only thing I'll say is I do want to remember the people that we've lost in this rivalry. We've already mentioned Lute Olson. Rest in peace, Lute Olson. Rest in peace, Michael Wright. And for Stanford, rest in peace, Pete Sauer. He was
a great
dude and left us too soon. So we're going to miss all those guys.
Yeah,
guys, I can't thank you enough. Just tremendous, tremendous program. Richard Jefferson, University of Arizona, and Casey Jacobson of Stanford, rivalries both college-wise and participating against one another. And that is going to conclude another chapter of the Sports Rivals podcast. We remind you of our sponsor, Bet Online. Head to betonline.ag today and take advantage of all the great sign-up bonuses. Again, that's betonline.ag and sign up today. You can find our show at believe.com or wherever you listen to your podcast. And if you're listening on Apple, be sure to subscribe, rate, and review the show. You can learn more about our show and other episodes by logging on to thesportsrivals.com. You can join the conversation in questions and suggestions for future shows. Follow us on Instagram at The Sports Rivals, Twitter at Rivals_podcast, and Facebook by searching for The Sports Rivals Podcast. And remember, it is the rivalries that make the game.